everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I think I heard the news. I think I heard that right. I was talking to our guest, Dr. Zach Guido, but I thought I heard the governor of Minnesota say this is the biggest snow event in Minnesota history coming up.
Somewhere in the Midwest. Maybe it was Minnesota.
I think so. I just heard part of it. But anyway, that's what we'll be talking with Dr. Guido about on this day, Tom. It's Washington's birthday. It's the official day. Yeah, and coming from Illinois, we would celebrate, and I think they still do. I think I read in the paper the other day, Lincoln's
his
birthday.
His birthday was combined with Lincoln's, and is that why we celebrated it yesterday?
Yeah, on the federal level, that's what we celebrated Monday. But places like Illinois still have holidays on, like, hey, it's the land of Lincoln. Lincoln's birthday, the 12th of February. Then today is Washington's birthday.
Over time, we've migrated all of these holidays to a Monday. So.
And, you know, I've always been a big, I like bakeries. And I remember our local bakery used to make these cookies that were in the shape of an axe, because Washington supposedly chopped down the cherry tree. I don't know. Anyway, it is also Ash Wednesday, the 40 days of Lent beginning, so a lot going on today. And, of course, the big story nationally is weather. We're going to talk with Dr. Zach Guido about that in a minute. This is the 13th year now. We're into the 13th year of the radio project. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios, the radio station, 1030 KVOI. It's like K-Voice. Worldwide live listening website is buckmastershow.com. The live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Guido, we like to bring him in, I don't know, every 4 to 6 weeks. He's our Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. And when I booked Zach a bunch of weeks ago, I didn't know today with the big national story would be the weather, but I'm glad it's a little serendipitous thing. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's a good day to fly kite.
Yeah, for sure.
Drink some soup.
There you go. Dr. Guido, the one of assistant research professors at the Arizona Institute for Resilience, known as AIR, which coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the University of Arizona campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water, resources, and beyond. And actually, it's pretty appropriate, because when you think of climate, Zach, it gets into a lot of different areas, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And that's what's really exciting about it. It's not just a physical process where we're studying the atmosphere. There's a lot of human dynamics associated with it. And a lot of, my colleagues and I think about these systems as being these integrated human and environmental systems. So it's quite fascinating to think about all the different manifestations of climate and how that plays out in the real world.
Well, it is an unusual day when you look at the national weather map and you see, I think it's 30 states are under some kind of a warning, a weather warning, whether it, like here, we're under the high wind warning, the upper Midwest, it's ice, in the east, it's snow. So it's unusual that the weather map would have so many weather warnings. This storm it's a monster.
Yeah, and I think, that's right. Like, at any one period, the U.S. obviously is a very large place, and there's going to be impacted by different sort of systems that are going on. And I think, if we thought about what's going on here in the Southwest and in the Western, we've got Western U.S., we've got this low pressure system that's sort of wafting down from the Pacific Northwest and sort of just parking over the area. And actually, it's a really cold storm, and as of a couple days ago, I think there was forecasted snow at really low elevations in California, maybe even some snow flurries, on the coast, which is not unprecedented, but it doesn't occur all that often.
Yeah, they were saying snow flurries in some of the low-lying areas of Southern California.
Yeah, yeah. You know, again, which isn't unprecedented and occurs, but certainly interesting to see. And you know, that's brought a lot of rain. It's not actually a particularly wet storm, but it's a lot pretty high temperature and pressure level gradients, which is generating strong winds. And you know, of course, in today, I think you know parts of Tucson over the last actual 24 hours or so. Parts of Tucson have experienced, you know, upwards of a half an inch of rain, which is, which is really nice. And so that's sort of one event. And
but the big feature certainly here is in Arizona, well, northern Arizona, some snow enough to cause all sorts of road issues. But the wind, we've had unofficial reports from Flagstaff, up to 75 to 80 mile an hour winds during the night up in Flagstaff. That's big time. That's the low end of a on the hurricane scale.
Yeah, like very severe winds up in Flagstaff. And what's generating that again is sort of these high pressure gradients, air pressure gradients. So we've got this low that's over the southwest, and to our east there's, you know, higher pressure, and that creates strong gradients. Those strong gradients basically drive airflow and strong wind. So that's what we're you know, experiencing across the Southwest, really. I wanted to say, though, because you mentioned the Minnesota, you know, up there, you know, you've got a low pressure system that is sort of moving down from, you know, more Arctic regions, Canadian regions, colliding with warmer air masses that are moving up across from the south of the U.S. And sort of at that confluence, you get a lot of dynamics and severe weather, and there's quite a bit of snowfall expected across the Midwest. I think, as you mentioned, which I hadn't heard of, but as you mentioned, in Minnesota, some of the record-setting snowfall amounts, which is impressive.
And they're rare. Tom has just brought up something very interesting on my screen. Back that down a little bit, Tom, about the rare blizzard warnings in Southern California. Just what we were saying about, some snow flurries, but L.A. and Ventura County residents that live in the mountains now, they're going to have wind gusts up to 75 miles an hour, Zach, and up to 7 feet of snow accumulating by Saturday night.
That is impressive. Like, particularly at the high, that 7 feet of snow is definitely obviously at the higher elevations where you can really extract the moisture that's in the atmosphere. I would also say what's interesting about this system is, we have sort of off to our east, across the much of the eastern area, there's a higher pressure ridge, which what it does is there's warmer conditions there, but it also blocks, you know, the traditional flow of air from west to east, and it creates more stationary conditions here in the Southwest.
Is that why the Southeast, they're saying record high temperatures?
Yeah.
This is really weird.
Right. And so we've got this low pressure system that's being restricted in its movement east. And so what ends up happening is this low pressure sort of doubles back on itself over the next few days, and it sort of moves a little bit north and back out over Southern California, over the ocean, a little bit over the ocean, and then moves back east over Arizona. And you know, there's forecasted for rainfall in on Saturday or even maybe even Sunday this weekend, depending on how the forecast evolves. So it's this interesting sort of circular movement of this low pressure system that is caused in part by this high pressure system off to the east that's preventing the flow. And then, again, that sort of retrograde or circular motion is not uncommon for us to experience, but it is, you know, providing a double hit here today and likely over the weekend.
When we continue with Dr. Zach Guido, UA climate scientist, I've got my feeling about being here 35 years. This feels to me like since October, the last 5 months have been very unusual in that the weather has seemed extremely unsettled and very untypical for southern Arizona. And I'm going to hear what Zach has to say about some of my thoughts on that. But right now, Zach, I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town. You love bakery goods.
Who doesn't?
All right. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. 6:30 in the morning, they open the doors Tuesday through Saturday, 7 o'clock Sunday morning. And again, a bit of advice for Mona's, especially on the weekends, get there early. Mona's is kind of like it is a very popular bakery. So for the best selection, do stop by early. Open right now for lunch. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. More with Dr. Zach Guido talking about the big story of the day, weather. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. We always enjoy our conversation with Dr. Zach Guido, Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Zach's over at the University of Arizona, where he is a climate scientist. So I proposed before the break kind of a a feeling that in 35 years here in town, since October, so we'll talk about the last 5 months, it has felt unusual. Let's call it the Southern Arizona weather has felt very unsettled to me. Am I on to something?
Well, I think these questions, like the context of climate change is always sort of present, right? Like, so if we just take, we can think about climate change in a minute, but if we just think about weather and you look across the globe or even across the U.S., like at any one time, there's going to be these extreme events going on. And so you're going to see these record snowfalls somewhere. You're going to see, or in the summer, maybe a record heat events somewhere. And, you know, weather happens. And we know that there's pretty much a characteristic of our climate is variability, high variability. Some places have more than others. And just across the globe, there's going to be a number of events at any one time. That being said, in the context of climate change, one of the things that we know to be true, or you know, based on physics, is that our world is warming. And you know, with the expectation and the observation of warming world, like you would expect warmer extremes to be more frequent and higher. And you know, we're seeing that. And then another expectation is just that extreme conditions writ large gets increases, and we're seeing that expression in some places with rainfall extremes, flooding, a bunch of different impacts. So we would expect those kinds of things to be going on. And then, you know, bringing it more to the local area, I mean, if you just look at the last couple years, we had in 2020 the monsoon was record dry for some places, and then we had back-to-back really wet monsoons.
Very productive.
Mm-hmm. This year we're seeing this crazy amount of atmospheric rivers. The snowpack conditions across the West look, from a water supply perspective, look really good, but
almost 200% of normal in some places, the snowpack.
Yeah, and you know, of course, then within that, you know, California's experienced dry conditions over the last 4 years, and previous to that there was, you know, atmospheric rivers. 2016, 2017 had a lot of atmospheric rivers that looked a lot like, you know, what the conditions are this year. So, you know, weather and these extreme events happen year to year, certainly, and we would expect that. And I think within the context of climate change, there is some reason to think that the warmer side of the equation is going to experience more extreme events and more sort of unsettled weather. And then sort of at the cutting edge of climate science is like, well, what's the position of the jet stream doing? And we haven't sort of figured out that. Like, there's theories that the jet stream will sort of be more variable in its position. And because of that, storms will come in, you know, maybe outside of their traditional frequency and seasonality. But there's a sort of a lot of uncertainty there. I think as a general statement, I would say this, like the climate system is set up to move energy around the globe from the tropics to the higher latitude regions, and that produces weather. And when you change the energy balance, which we know that we're doing, you're gonna have some weird expressions. And whether or not like science can actually pin down what those patterns and trends look like totally depends on the kind of variable that you're looking at. Temperature is easier to do because it's more spatially coherent than precipitation, which is just harder because there's a lot more factors at play, and there's more daily and weekly and seasonal variability that makes it difficult to quantify that uncertainty. So that's a long way to say that we would totally expect, in a world in which the energy balance is altered, that is to say that more energy is staying in our atmosphere now than was in the past, largely because we create this blanket of mm-hmm. of gases in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. We would expect there to be odd things that happen. And whether or not what we can attribute to climate change is sort of at the fore of climate science. But we have pinned down to a pretty certain degree some of those conditions, like warmer conditions. Like, I mean, we know that the climate change is leading to generally warmer temperatures and heat waves and more frequency of warm days, more frequency of record heat conditions, like that's pretty solid. Precipitation and flooding and those sorts of things, like we've been able to find the climate change signal in some places, but not in others, in large part because it's just harder to do scientifically.
It does feel, though, doesn't it? Kind of we've been unstable for a while, for a few months.
Well, I think that observation is right. I mean, just going back again to the monsoon, we're getting whiplashed. You know? But I think if, like, as a climate scientist, like, we zoom out. We look at the bigger picture, and, you know, memory is always biased toward recency. Mm-hmm. The last couple years have a greater importance in our mind than, you know, what had happened, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And so, you know, as a climate scientist, I'm always trying to sort of contextualize what we're seeing and making sure that, like, it really is, like, outside of what is normal or, you know, putting it within sort of percentage or percentile, contextualizing it within the history of climate, I think.
All right. Let's hear what our friend David has to say about all of this. David, go ahead.
Yes. Well, what you're seeing now is the early stages of an extremely powerful negative feedback loop that the global warming has caused. The last summer was one of the hottest summers on record, and Greenland melted faster than ever. And
that's true.
All this melt water in the North Atlantic. And what's happening is it's disrupting the thermohaline circulation flow, because the melt water is fresh. Even though it's cold, it won't sink. And it blocks the circulation where the warm, salty water moves north into the Arctic and it sinks and comes back underneath and continues this current, which moderates the climate. But when all this fresh water comes off Greenland, it shuts this down and alters the world's ocean circulation, and the same things happen in the southern hemisphere too. And what's happening also is build up of greenhouse gases is creating a tremendous instability in the atmosphere, in that the greenhouse gases trap longer wave infrared radiation that warms the stratosphere. When it goes out, and it's trapped in the troposphere, and the stratosphere then cools because the longer wave radiation, which goes back out, is trapped by the greenhouse gases in the troposphere, and it causes a cooling of the stratosphere.
Okay.
And the stratosphere cools, it creates more instability. And that's why this alters the whole worldwide weather patterns. You're getting all these extreme weather outbreaks.
All right. Some good comments there. Greenland, certainly, the warming there is very pronounced in the Arctic.
Yeah, and I think the caller brings up an important point, and that is that the climate system has a bunch of non-linearities into it. That is, these feedbacks that he were talking about, like perturbation or some force that's applied, like, leads to, you know, a greater reaction, right? And Greenland ice melting, what's important about that is that as you melt ice is reflective. So it reflects a lot of the incoming solar radiation back and sort of moderates the warming. But as you shrink that amount of reflection, the area of reflection, you accelerate the warming. And it is, in fact, one of the reasons why, when you look at global temperature maps, the Arctic area is warming at a greater pace than the other regions. I would also say that there's a whole bunch of those non-linearities. And this is one of the uncertainties in what we think the future will look like. A recent paper just came out, I think, that sort of quantified that a meta-analysis of the climate science literature and I'm forgetting the exact numbers, but identified, you know, 40 so of these feedback loops, seven of which dampen the warming signal. So it doesn't always go toward change equals more change. You know, some of them can actually suppress that change, but the majority of them were those positive feedbacks.
Let's see if we can work in one more call. Paul wants to talk about volcanoes and affecting climate. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, that's about it. Over the many years I've been around, I've noticed that the weather around the world, and I study it some, is affected by the by the strength and the number of volcanoes around the world. And does this fellow you're talking to know what's happening to the temperature in the core of the Earth that affects volcanoes?
Okay. Do you know anything about that? First of all, the volcanoes and climate. It's a very interesting field of study.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, you can see the global expression of large volcanic eruptions, through history. And usually what happens is if you get the eruption large enough that ejects a bunch of particles, aerosols into the atmosphere, it actually has a global cooling effect. So when Mount Pinatubo and others erupted, you could see the global temperature dipped for a couple years thereafter, and then as the aerosols sort of settle out, it returns to normal. So, you know, volcanoes do have an impact on global temperature.
Quickly running out of time, Zach, but there was a second part to that question about the core, heating of the core of the Earth. Do we have any way to determine that?
Well, you know, back in the day, I studied geology. I do have a master's degree in geology, and here's what I would say. I would think it's not the change in the core temperature. It's probably minuscule.
Okay.
That it's not affecting the volcanic activity in terms of, you know, frequency and that sort of thing.
Okay, Zach Guido, always a pleasure. Always great to see you. Try to bring you in one more time before you got a big international trip coming up in April. So we'll try to get you on once more. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Midway point of the Buckmaster Show in the middle of the week on this Washington's birthday, also Ash Wednesday, and a very active weather day as well. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition, February 22nd, Washington's birthday, Ash Wednesday, and a very active weather day as we just spent a half an hour. Good questions from a couple of listeners, and always Dr. Zach Guido at the University of Arizona, our climate scientist, has great information. The Buckmaster Show, this portion presented by, well, we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, Green Things, 3384 East River Road, by the Rito River. They just got a great shipment of Talavera pottery, some great items coming in for the sister part of the business called Zocalo Village. You might want to check that out. Here are a couple of websites for you. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Green Things, the folks over there didn't get off the bus yesterday. 53rd year of business, open daily. Check it out. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We will utilize now the live line for our monthly conversation with Will Humble, Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Will has more than three decades in public health, including more than two decades with the Arizona Department of Health Services, where he served in various capacities, including the agency director from 2009 to 2015. Hey, Will, how are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. Dr. Cullen is certainly one of the most qualified, I believe, health professionals in the United States. Yet when she went before the Arizona Legislative Committee that was charged with confirming her as the state health director, she was rejected. Do you think that was a done deal right off the bat, Will?
Oh, that was obvious. I mean, I went to that new director nominations committee. It's a newly formed committee in the Senate. And I was there the whole 4 hours, you know, for the entire hearing. And it was super clear that the three Republicans on the committee had made their mind up in advance, just by the questions that they had been. I mean, they really weren't questions. They were more, it's almost like a prosecution, honestly. they had obviously made their mind up ahead of time. And I believe the entire Senate had made their mind up in advance, because that went to the floor as well on a voice vote. And, you know, the entire Senate ended up voting her down.
Was this part of the deal when you were confirmed? Did you have to go through this process?
Yeah, I went through the process in January of 2010. I was nominated by Governor Brewer to be the health director, and I went in front of the Senate Health Committee, and at the time it was chaired by the late Carolyn Allen, a senator up here from the Phoenix area. And I had some pointed questions, especially from the Democrats, actually, during that nomination. But they were all fair and totally legitimate questions. I mean, they were a combination of questions about my qualifications, my interest in the job, but also like some gotcha kind of questions that, like, hey, this is something you should know. And if you don't know it after you've been in that job for a while, then I have questions. But I was lucky to get the right answers to those. So it was totally fair. And I thought it was a good process. I went to the floor. I did have a couple no votes, I think. I forgot who. But this director nominations committee is a completely different animal beast, really, than what we used to have.
You are crafting an op-ed piece, and I've taken a look at it. It's titled, you've titled it Checks and Balances or Sabotage, You Decide. And I think that my friend Kurt Prendergast, the opinion page editor of the Arizona Daily Star, would be very anxious to get this published. He's always looking for good pieces. What's at the heart of this, Will Humble?
Well, here's the deal. And I've been in state government a long, long time. And one of the things that I've noticed over time, and this is really intuitive, this what I'm going to say next, which is that when the executive branch, when the governor is of the same party as the majority, especially as the Senate, then there turns out to be, honestly, a lack of checks and balances in the system. And I'm a big believer in checks and balances, and I believe the legislative branch. I like our Constitution, both the U.S. and Arizona Constitution. And one of the things I really like about it is checks and balances, that you've got the legislative, judicial, and executive branches all with tension among each other and each holding each other accountable. And the founding fathers did that on purpose so that they could distribute power, so that we didn't end up like they had in England, with essentially a king and all. So, the lack of checks and balances when there's not a difference in parties. I like divided government for that reason, because it holds people accountable. My argument is that a director nomination committee like the Senate just formed is actually a pretty good idea. Hmm. Because what I've observed over time that when these different standing committees, like the Health Committee or the Environment Committee and, Natural Resources Committee, when they do the director nomination vetting, it's often sort of a cursory review, not real in depth. And so I think the system could benefit from a dedicated committee whose job it is to just look at the qualifications of these director nominees, especially when somebody new takes office. But the actual functioning of that committee is like not good. And in my opinion, it's the decisions that are made by the chair about how to proceed and how the committee is being run. And it's, in my opinion, not being run to vet the qualifications of the director nominees, but rather to impart some sort of political test to certain of the nominees, not transportation. I mean, that nominee went right through. It's because it's not hot button issues in transportation. I mean, they might have questions of how come the rural places aren't getting roads like they should and that kind of stuff. But for health services and access and economic security, but especially access and health services, there's questions about, health equity, about abortion services, about reproductive health. And so the hot button issues are just in a few of these agencies. And in my view, this new process is really more political than it is what it should be, which is to evaluate the qualifications for these candidates for really important jobs that have a lot of, that the decisions that these agency directors make affect every single one of us in Arizona.
The shame of it, and I think it is a shame, is that Dr. Cullen, as you point out in this, I hope soon to be published op-ed, is a super talented director candidate.
Oh, actually, I thought I did a good job. I was in that job 6 years, but she's more qualified than I was when I.
Huh.
I'd been in the agency 20 years, but I had never managed $1 billion and actually $2 billion at the time and a staff of 2,000. I'd worked my way through the ranks and I gradually took more responsibility. But Dr. Cullen came into the job having already managed multi-billion-dollar budgets, thousands of people. She was a rear admiral in the U.S. Public Health Service, assistant
surgeon general.
Surgeon General, I was going to say Attorney General.
Yeah, Assistant Surgeon General.
So, and, a really late career professional. But those are great qualifications. What I really like about her is that she's really into accountability, like with her staff and with the mission of the organization she's running. And that is an area that our current health department desperately needs. Especially in the operations side of the house, but other places too, they need to be held to some account for performing the statutory mandates that the legislature has given them. And Dr. Cullen has the personality to make that happen. And that's the other ingredient. It's not just about, have you, accomplished a lot and have you been responsible for a lot of things, but do you have the personality for what the agency needs right now. And I believe she did. And I don't think, I really don't think they're going to be able to find another candidate of her caliber for the kind of needs that that agency has right now.
All right, Dr. Hummel, I just gave you a doctorate. Will Humble is with us for his monthly visit to the Buckmaster Show. And Will, I guess you've got a big day tomorrow. Is this your group's annual meeting?
Well, it's a conference that we put on once a year. So our organization's mission is mainly around advocacy, legislative and administrative advocacy, but we also have a core function in professional development. So we put together a conference once a year that, you know, brings together public health professionals from around the state. And we have a whole bunch of different topics. So we've got 26 speakers on a range of topics that focus on the work that the county health departments are doing to improve health disparities in their counties. And so we've got, a lot of times this ends up being sort of a Phoenix-centric kind of conference, this year we've got people coming in from the entire state, so people are staying overnight, and everybody's really looking forward to it. It's also, you know, the first time in a few years that you can really get together and not have mitigation measures and stuff in place.
Just out of curiosity, some listeners might want to know about the venue. Is it open to the public or what?
So it's at the Desert Willow Conference Center in Phoenix, and we've got an online option that's free, and you can go to my blog, azpha.org, Will's blog. I just posted the blog before the show, so listeners can go to my website, go to the blog, and watch the main, like the plenary sessions with everybody. Mm-hmm. You won't be able to see the breakout sections, which we've got 12. I don't know, 18 of those.
Anyway,
the breakout sessions. You can't see those, but you can see the main session.
The main stuff will be available. Okay. All right. Will Humble with us, director of the Arizona Public Health Association. He has got a great blog, Will's Blog, it's called, so folks can find out more about the event tomorrow. But we've got a lot more for Will Humble after we take a break. Stay with us, Will, and stay with us, listeners. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bvtravel.com for more information.
And I'm looking forward to Sunday being with Ryan Hansen. We just heard Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel talking about the travel show. Ryan and I will kick it off about travel trends, what's on our bucket list. Everybody's invited to come out. We're going to be doing that. The show starts at 11 o'clock Sunday morning at the Hilton El Conquistador. Again, everybody's welcome. Love to see some of our listeners at that panel discussion with Ryan Hansen about travel trends. And I'll be talking about what's on my travel bucket list, and always on my list is trip over to Silver City. That'd be a great springtime getaway. Do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Check out southwestnewmexico.org before you take that 3-hour drive east to Tucson to Silver City and Grant County. Lots to do over there. Again, their website, southwestnewmexico.org. We continue with our conversation with Will Humble, the former director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. Will is the current executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association, which has their big annual event tomorrow up in Phoenix. Will, Fortune magazine had a kind of lengthy piece that they were contending in this piece that the COVID pandemic has changed America's healthcare system forever. You take issue with that one for sure.
Oh, I think that article was over the top. It was, in my opinion, it was more of an opinion piece than it was an actual news piece. Maybe it was intended to be editorial. Look, there's long-term demographic trends that are shaping, and policy trends that are shaping healthcare in this country. And one of the big things is that, you know, I'm a boomer myself. I'm 63, and I'm entering that phase where you're more likely to have to need different kinds of procedures and health services. And so the demand for healthcare is going to be increasing over the next couple decades, and it's already increasing now because as the boomers age, they need, you know, are going to require more more resources and health services. And at the same time, there's a lot of physicians that are retiring, not because of the pandemic, but because they're ready to retire. And so you have this, you know, bolus of people that are going to be requiring, you know, more services. At the same time, you have a lot of retirements happening within the medical corps. We'll talk about, you know, primary care docs and that kind of stuff. Now, with respect to nurses, the article, I think, was more on point, which is the COVID-19 pandemic was really grueling for nurses, far more so than it was for physicians, because the nurses were the ones that were really taking the day-to-day care. Anybody that's worked in a hospital knows the grunt work and the heavy lifting is really done by the nursing staff. And it was really grueling for a long time. And a lot of nurses, I think, accelerated their retirement or went into other kinds of semi-retirement or left the profession. I think COVID had more of an impact when it comes to nursing than it did physicians.
Well, I was talking to a friend recently, and he visited a local emergency room. I'm not going to mention which one it is, but he noticed there is an outsourcing at this particular hospital, outsourcing to another, a company out of state that actually does the hiring, does the billing, and uses primarily, Will, physician's assistants.
Yeah. Oh, that's a nationwide trend, and it's, you know, in fact, in most emergency departments in Arizona, they're not working for the hospital. They're working for an entity that contracts out to the hospital. So that's a growing trend. And we are seeing a trend towards, you know, using the scope of practice, using more of the scope of practice that nurse practitioners and physician assistants have, which I think is a good thing. I think for too long, the medical profession has hung on to, you know, this idea that other professions need to have a limited scope of practice. And so there's these turf wars that have been happening for decades where, you know, physicians don't want nurse practitioners to do too much, and nurse practitioners don't want the next level down to do too much. And in my opinion, some of that is because they're afraid they're going to take some of their cheese, you know, but they'll frame it as, you know, that this is all about patient safety. And there's an element of that. I mean, you have to be competent at what you're going to do in terms of procedures. But I think it's a good trend to start using the full scope of practice for all of our licensed professionals, because we're going to need it now, and it's going to be needed even more as we press through the future.
One more item in my always large stack of stuff for Will Humble is a new study saying that COVID antibodies could actually last longer than we thought. Some of your thoughts on this, Will, before we wrap things up.
It's pretty simple. The data, I think, has been pretty clear from the beginning that antibody titers, meaning the level of antibodies in your blood after an exposure, after an infection, or after the vaccine, last about 6 months, and then it starts to wane. And different studies have different number of months, but that's a pretty good benchmark. And so that's why, in my opinion, that's why we continue to see and have seen throughout this whole pandemic a 6 month pattern to infection waves. And tied to the fact that people's antibody titers are waning. So you get a lot of infections over the Christmas holiday season. You infect millions of Arizonans, probably 2-3 million. And they're protected for the next 5 months. Those antibody titers drop towards the summer, and you get another infection wave in the summer. So I expect us to have another infection wave this summer. There's no reason to think that this pattern's going to change because the antibody titers wane. Now, having said that, the severity of the infections get progressively less severe because you still have what are called T cells, which are your really fighter cells inside your immune system. And that's why each time you get infected, it's in general taken as a whole, less severe. And the virus itself has mutated to become less severe over time, too.
Quick follow-up, and I need about a 15-second answer. Where does the booster play in, say you've got the 6 months, the natural immunity? What about the booster?
Well, everyone should, number one, go get the new Omicron booster. Well, it came out last November. The rates are really low on that, too low. And in the end, we're going to end up probably having booster shots at the same time that people get their flu shots. Okay. And for both COVID and influenza. Different vaccines. Okay.
Will Humble, thank you very much. And again, your website for people that want to take a look at the conference tomorrow, please.
Yeah, azpha.org, and it's right on the top. It's my blog.
All right. Thank you, Will. Good luck with the event tomorrow.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
All right. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Tom on the other side of the glass, Bill here wishing you a great afternoon. Back with you in 23 hours.